We present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the Situations Vacant column in Sutton Borough News, read by Brian Perkins.
Tire fitter required for depot must be able to work under pressure.
Thank you, Stephen Derrick of Reading, for sending us that. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Richard Ingrams and Tony Slattery. Facing them, on my left, Alan Corran and Nick Clark. Before we start round one, here's a piece from The Times.
Two legal brothels in Canberra will donate hour-long interludes as first prizes in raffles to raise money for the Royal Flying Doctor Service. Two books of tickets have been sold in Parliament.
Well, that's how things are down under. Thank you, Geoffrey Page of East Sussex, for sending us the cutting. Richard, your question. How did a peer appear to be trading places?
I think this may be a reference to our friend Lord Archer.
It may well be.
Who surfaced once again, having said he'd done nothing wrong. He now changed his story and admits that he made a grave error.
Yes.
When he bought a lot of shares in the name of a mysterious Iraqi person, or a Kurd, I believe they're called. For Mr. his name. It was Brooks, spelt wrong, with Bruce, of course. I mean, some such name.
That's absolutely right.
Anyway, he now admits that it's all a terrible mistake, and everybody thinks that his career is at an end, but I don't think it is.
But surely his greatest mistake was becoming a novelist.
Well, you see, but again, he's just been offered £14 million to write another book.
In a brown paper envelope. Yeah.
Lord Archer has apologised for embarrassing his wife by dealing in shares in Anglia TV, where she was a director. No wonder he wanted to keep it quiet. He's inadvertently become a majority shareholder in the 1976 series of Sale of the Century. Tony, how nice to have you back on the programme.
Thank you.
Your question is this. Who ensured an end to the days of wine and a girl's best friend?
Richard, any ideas on this?
I don't know.
It's to do with Peter Lilly.
Oh, I never pay any attention to him at all.
I'm very glad to hear it, Tony.
Yes.
Yes, one hears all kinds of things.
One does. You're not wrong there, Richard. No.
Well, is it the city? Is it the city? They're
going
to find one bottle out of every case of Mouton Rothschild to pay their national insurance.
Yes.
So every time you get a case of Mouton Rothschild, you have to give one to the Chancellor. Pity it's not Le Montre. He wouldn't have to go to Odbins. No, to...
It's sort of like that. I don't think quite really does it.
They were paying them in jewellery.
And
why? Just like the BBC. After this programme, John Burt is round the back with a little trinket for me.
You'll have to take
a bottle of Latvian hock. And this is now common practice among dodgy companies like BBC, that in order to avoid the employer paying any sort of national insurance benefit or whatever. So they're paying them in all sorts of odds and sods and Cupid dolls and suspenders and things like that, instead of giving them real money.
And?
They're not going to be allowed to do it anymore.
That's right.
Is that what you're
drawing
for?
Teeth. This is, as I said earlier, Peter Lilly, head of the SS. Sorry. The DSS, who has closed a loophole whereby national insurance contributions could be avoided by taking remuneration in the form of large amounts of gold, diamond jewellery and cases of fine wines. So, investigators have finally discovered why Princess Margaret hasn't paid her stamp since 1957. Nick, who made a round robin before making a counter-attack?
Robin Cook spoke on behalf of every single sub-postmaster and mistress in the land and claimed that each one of them, individually and severally, was desperately concerned that their sub-post office was going to be bulldozed and razed to the ground by the President of the Board of Trade, in effect, as he privatised the Royal Mail. And on the very same morning, up spake the representative for the Federation of the said body and said, oh no, it's not, it's blatant scaremongering, we're happy as Larry with the plans.
Yes, comprehensively answered. This is about Robin Cook, Shadow Secretary for Trade, who attacked government plans to privatise the postal service after conducting a survey of sub-post offices. His privatisation survey took quite a while to complete because offices were extremely busy handling last-minute share applications for Anglia Television. We move smartly on to Alan, and I'd say to Alan, as usual, the first piece of music is for you. Prizes for guessing what the question's going
to
be about.
It really is unfair to take these minor stories from local papers. It's just lucky I didn't notice it in the Ham and High this week. This is that extremely thin woman who's unable to distinguish between a telephone and a parking meter. She puts a sovereign into a parking meter, dials a number and hopes to speak to someone. Naturally enough, when the person lifts the other end, there's nothing happening. Just all this noise. 2 hours being up. I think it's the once radiant Princess Singh.
That's right, absolutely right. This is the allegation that the Princess of Wales has been making phone calls to an attractive, aristocratic married man at inconvenient times.
What's that? BBC
Two. Excuse me a second. Strange, there's never anyone there. Anyway.
Nine.
I was going to say it's for you, but I thought, well, it's what the hell is it?
Queen Mother, that is. Calls have been traced to Clarence House. An old woman with a gin bottle is phoning Mr. Corrigan. Every day for 78 years. Never got lucky yet.
Anyway, to get back to the plot. Diana has denied responsibility for some 300 calls and can prove she didn't make four of them on one day when she was either out to lunch at the hairdresser's, out to dinner or at the cinema. It's all go being a princess, isn't it? Of course, the investigation was called off after police called at her apartment and found Bob Hoskins sitting in the corner.
Say, go on, make another call.
Well, we've come to the end of a round, mercifully. The scores are Richard and Tony, 2, Alan and Nick, 5. We start round 2 with an obituary from the Daily Telegraph.
Hal Denver was an accomplished cowboy performer and held world records for lasso spinning and knife throwing. His wives often served as targets in his knife throwing act. He was married 3 times.
Thank you, Christopher Davis of Bristol, for sending us that. Richard, it's your turn for a question again. What jolly super message led from the courthouse to the doghouse?
This is the case of the poor old dog, which was described as a pit bull terrier, which, under the new laws brought in, had to be put down. And Jolly Super, or Julie Cooper, as she's better known, made a last-minute appeal and sent a fax to the judge. The judge was Jolly Beatty and said she was guilty of contempt of court. It emerged that no one actually knows what a pit bull terrier is. They'd passed a law banning them. And when it came to identifying one, no one was quite sure whether this dog was one or not. It
seemed quite common. Barbara Cartland comes pretty close.
I don't think she suffered enough.
She should be muzzled.
Absolutely right. In every respect, Richard, this is about Jolly Cooper, who joined in the campaign to save a condemned pit bull called Buster. Controversy has raged over what type the creature's long, shaggy mane, tiny, shiny nose and huge, gnashing teeth indicate. But against all odds, it's been decided that Jolly is a novelist. Miss Cooper wanted to send a message in support of the dog, whose owner said she faxed it up. At least that's what we think she said. Tony, your question now. Whose canine courtiers brought Heathrow to heel?
It was the Queen's corgis, and they ran amok on the runway or something like that.
Right.
And tried to hump the legs of Boeing 747, something like that. and causing more chaos than air traffic control usually does on its own. Right. Corgis right. And doggies. I'm not sure what a doggie is, though. It's a cross between a corgi and a...
And a pit bull terrier.
You broke it.
There were five thoroughbreds, weren't there? And there were two which were ill-bred creatures, yes. Called Harris and Brandy, which were particularly Randy. It's true. They were the worst. They were the ones, because the guard dog was trained to sniff out terrorists, and he got those two's numbers straight away.
Pitbull terrorists.
You have four children that are all sexually a bit iffy, and then suddenly you find your dog's the wrong ones too. They had a go at a police dog that was sniffing drugs. I mean, you imagine them sidling up to this. You've got anything for the week, you know.
Well, this is Her Majesty the Queen, you know, the one without the phone bill, who had trouble with her corgis, unlike Edward, who seems perfectly at home playing with his dinkies. The dogs were brought under control by Prince Philip. The well-known animal lover misses them regularly. But then his aim isn't what it used to be. Nick, it's your turn for some music.
Over Bridge of Sighs, to rest my eyes in shades of green, under dreaming spires, to Ichiku Park, that's where I've been. What did you do there?
I got high.
What did you feel there?
Well, I cried.
And all the tears there.
Tell you why. It's all too beautiful.
Well, that was the Small Faces singing Ichiku Park. And your question is, where is crime prevention becoming a matter of swings and roundabouts?
Wandsworth.
Right.
All the acutely outrageous ideas that come forward come from Wandsworth. You know, this is the place where the future will be decided. Right. And the Parks Police of Wandsworth are going to patrol the streets with a little batch of bylaws, and they're not just looking for what dogs leave behind, either the corgis or indeed any other dogs that may be mentioned in the programme.
Right. Absolutely right in every particular. It is the Tory flagship London borough of Wandsworth, where they propose to extend their Parks Police Service to fighting crime out on the streets. The Crack Keep Off the Grass Squad and the Rapid Response No Ball Games Unit have sped into action, arresting suspects feared to be carrying a concealed loaf with intent to feed the ducks. All around the borough can be heard the new official challenge. Go ahead, punk. Make my picnic. Enough of this wonderful character impersonation. Alan, where was it suspected there was a fifth column in charge of the fifth form?
Yeah, well, I thought that this was denied. The headmaster of Gordon, or the founder of Gordon's Tomb, actually had a sort of monocle and a tin leg and a luger and was put there to subvert Greek consorts, young princes. It's why they're all a bit odd. It was given into their charge, and the hope was that Hitler would win, and then the English royal family would, having come under the sway of Kurt Hart, and all barking mad as a result of going to Gordon's Tomb, would run the country.
What I didn't realise was the entire staff of Gordonston were German, weren't they? And they arrested a lot of them and locked them up, but they decided not to lock up Kurt Hahn, even though they thought he was a spy. Is that right? On the 50-year rule,
of course it is. The
papers have been revealed to show that he was indeed fingered as being a spy.
Well, I didn't want to bring together the words Gordonston and fingered.
Prince Charles and Andrew were educated there, and even Edward, despite rumours of the Nazi party... The suspect headmaster, Dr. Kurt Hahn, served Germany during the 1418 War and advocated the return of German colonies while educating Prince Philip with cold showers, physical exercise, and for starved pupils, regular beatings. It's a wonder Philip agreed to send his sons there with such a namby-pamby liberal in charge. Suspicions were aroused when Dr. Hahn confiscated the vaulting horse and started sending errant pupils out of the class, saying, "For you, Tommy, the lesson is over." And the scores at the end of round two are still poised in that indeterminate factor where Richard and Tony are 6, but Alan and Nick are 9. We start round 3 with a piece from the Cumbrian News sent to us by Roger Bray of Aberystwyth.
A new £700,000 crematorium was officially opened in Aberystwyth today. The opening of the new facility marks the end of a long campaign by several bodies.
Tony, to relieve the tension, here's some music for you.
That he's in the mailbox the same as before, but no one is waiting for me anymore. The end of our story is told on the door. A cottage for sale.
Tony, how was a broken record sold on the home front?
A broken record sold on the home front?
Yep.
Ah, this is to do with a recording. There we are. I leave that with you, ladies and gentlemen.
It's to do with a cottage and a sale.
Yes.
And it broke a record, Tony.
Oh, a cottage. Well, because of the enormous price.
No.
No,
but that was an issue as well.
No.
I'm going to pass it over to the other side.
It was a place in County Durham. It was a cottage that was sold faster than any other cottage has ever been sold.
That's right. 75
sold minutes. 75 minutes for 79 grand. I thought we did that very well.
Did you hear
the
follow-up to the story?
No.
Apparently there was a couple on their holidays who thought they bought it for £78,000. And they came back expecting to get the keys to the door to this cottage and found they'd been gazumped by these Dutch people. Isn't that outrageous?
The only house being bought and sold at the moment.
In County Durham, several times over.
This was the sale of a cottage in County Durham that was completed in just 75 minutes, or, as the estate agent described it, just over 2 hours. 75 minutes beats the average sale speed by 41 days, 22 hours and 45 minutes, and sets a new British and Commonwealth record. However, some late news, the agent's been suspended pending a result of a dope test. Nick, what men in black have been wired for sound?
Refs.
Right.
The idea is that other broadcasting organisation, whose name I cannot mention,
no.
A rival organisation, wishes to put radio microphones on referees so that they can be abused by the commentators. So, you know, get your bloody eyes tested, ref will be transmitted immediately to him and he'll be able to reply.
Absolutely right. It's about the Football Association, which is about to equip all Premiership referees with microphones. The scheme, launched by B-Sky B, will enable referees to address the crowd. No, actually, I've got a father. A trial match ended in chaos when radio interference caused the ref to announce Arsenal was substituting Ian Wright for a takeaway pizza. Still, unlike Arsenal, at least the pizza was hot in the box. But deeply unfair, I think. Alan, who will be making man's work of a bitter pill?
This is a contraceptive question, isn't it?
Ah,
it isn't really working. I mean, there were two contraceptive pill stories in my paper this morning, which I opened it and took immediately with a cup of tea. And it said that vast numbers of men are going to be given this contraceptive pill to reduce the number of children born to vast numbers of women. But the only time it had been tested, this bloke's wife had fallen pregnant. And he was then suing the pill company. Or another man. Or an art dealer who may be not mentioned.
Or a great
peer novelist, or almost anybody who's getting their end away these days. We're not going to have the one about the woman who took her cat hostage, are we?
No.
That was a great story.
What's that?
In Oregon, a woman, slightly balmy woman, I think, they had princesses in Oregon, but she took her... she walked into an A&P supermarket with her cat and a knife and said, one move and the cat gets it. and the police shot her dead. Others must have seen this.
Somebody said
she went in. 2 Mars bars, packet of Daz, and I'm going to kill the cat.
I could try that on this programme, couldn't I? To get answers. If you don't answer, the cat gets it. Isn't it funny that the holes in a cat's fur come just where its eyes are?
Not all of them.
Where are we? Oh, yes. In the Paris in Regent Street. Yes, yes. You're quite right, Alan. This is about the first male contraceptive pill, which a volunteer will put to the test on Friday night, approximately 1 hour after closing time. Scientists believe this 2.5-minute experiment could make or break the project. To ensure the success of the test, the volunteer was issued with 2 tablets, a contraceptive for him, and in case of emergencies, an aspirin for his wife. At the end of round 3, the scores haven't really changed a great deal. Richard and Tony are 8, but Alan and Nick are still in the lead with 12. Before we start the final round, here's a cutting from the Malden and Burham Standard.
Locks on the gate of the sewage treatment works in Crabs Hill, Hatfield Peveril, have been forced. Nothing was stolen.
It's the best news we've had all day. Well, thank you, Neil Dixon of Malden, for sending us that. Richard, it's your turn for a piece of music.
Well, she lives all alone in a house by a school. She wears fur coats and hats and old-fashioned shoes. And her one aim in life, to be on the screen, top billing with ballet, her favorite dream. So once a year, Granny takes a trip, always first class, and she's well equipped for the movie audition.
That was ghastly. It was, in fact, the Purple Gang singing Granny Takes a Trip. And your question is, how did a fiesta cause Granny's trip to be cancelled?
Further bad taste about the Queen Mother, I presume.
No, no, no. This is about another Granny.
Barbara Cartland?
Keep going, kid. Answer the question or the pussy gets it.
It's a bloke with a Skoda.
That's right.
Unable to sell it, he thought the selling point would be if I put an old lady in the back, it's the only way to shift this Skoda. What
that's
I like.
Right.
Anyway, he found someone with a Ford Fiesta who wanted a big mulatto stripper in the back and thought he could see this looking through the Skoda. They've got these terrible fuzzy windows. So they did the swap, and after the man went away with the Fiesta, the person with the Skoda looked in the back and found he hadn't got an attractive, glamorous woman at all. He got this old granny who had been coerced by the driver, who said, I'm going to take you to Bournemouth, make your life wonderful, squidgy, and she went with him, as old ladies will, and found herself sold. Glasses guide quoted 50 quid for the nanny, and a tenner for the Skoda.
The 73-year-old old lady was borrowed from a home and left in the back of the Skoda while the con man took Mrs. Patricia Wakeling's Fiesta to, quote, test the brakes, end quote. After 30 minutes, it was decided either he'd stolen the Fiesta or the brakes didn't work. Tony, your question now. Who said, that's no lady, that's my wife? There's an easy one for you.
Is it? Well, yes. So many people have said that throughout comic history.
Right. This is about Robert Elliott.
Oh, yeah, him. May I just say this is a real nightmare for me. I haven't got one question right, and I've read the papers a lot, and I don't know the answer. Since you look at me like that.
Because you were brought on, Tony, to make me look good.
Yes.
The sad truth.
This is another American, when they're not holding their cats to ransom. This was an American who married a man. He didn't know this for 10 years. Actually, I was wrong with my earlier answer. It does prove they have a royal family in America. Anyway, he spent 10 years with this bloke and eventually sued for divorce. And during the course of the divorce, it was revealed to him that his wife was a man. He didn't know this. And so he's not now having a divorce, he's having an annulment. I don't know why. But he's also suing her for $1 million.
What for?
For being a bloke.
I bet those Manchester doctors wish they'd chosen that couple for the male fertility, male contraceptive pill. There wouldn't have been any problems, would there?
No. But he was terribly disappointed.
Probably found her at the back of a Skoda. This is Robert Elliott, who was to have offered Mrs. April Elliott a generous divorce settlement until he discovered his wife of 10 years had been a man. Mr. Elliot promptly withdrew his cash offer, a move which didn't bother April, as she had a little something tucked away. They get worse. Meanwhile, Mr. Elliot is said to be heartbroken, which is hardly surprising, as his wife had everything a man could possibly want of a star. Moustache, muscles, a tattoo. Nick, your question now. Who got a stamp of approval by enveloping himself in a bit of detective work?
This is the postman in Potter, isn't it? And he got a card saying, please send this car to the lady who used to walk about and now has a car and has got a white Mac. And he found her, basically. He searched all over Poto, high and low, and he found this lady who just bought a car.
Absolutely right. Brilliantly answered. Alan, who's climbing the ladder of inventive success?
People this week are very slightly strange. I think this is a man who's invented a ladder for spiders. Mr. Hanley from Bedfordshire, who has discovered a spider in his bath. And rather than do the decent thing, which is put the hot tap on and watch its legs shrivel, or jump in the bath in large boots, he has invented a small plastic ladder, which buyers are going to be encouraged to lower into their baths so the spiders can climb out. Of all the things you wouldn't want to buy, I should think that's the least of them. But, yes, that's what he's done.
That's right. This is the latest crop of inventions to be patented, including a rubber ladder to help spiders climb out of the bath. Other inventions include a telephone that flashes red when there's an incoming call. A certain Oliver Hoare tested the prototype. But he has to be careful not to leave it by the window because the traffic stopped all day for 18 months. Now, before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Richard, have you brought a cutting with you?
This is from the Times, Brian.
Oh, good.
It says, David Mellor was left nursing his pride last night after being attacked by a member of a television studio audience after taking part in a show hosted by Sir David Frost entitled TV Violence, Will It Change Your Life?
Well done, sir. Tony.
This is an advertisement for an Indian restaurant, which says, Shabab, Indian takeaway, opening Wednesday the 13th of April, just 2 minutes from Wiston Hospital.
Thank you. Nick.
I'm indebted to Miss Fletcher for this in Sutton Coldfield. Muddiford lifeboat rescued a honeymoon couple stranded when the engine on their boat broke down in the Solent off Barton-on-Sea. The boat was called First Attempt.
Alan?
I got one from the Salisbury Journal, Barry.
Right.
A man in a kilt who was finally allowed into the Salisbury Cricket Club pavilion last Saturday, following a heated discussion with stewards about correct dress, was later evicted after he took off his anorak to reveal a brassiere. I think he was trying to make some sort of feminist point, said the onset Peter Fenwick. But when he removed two cricket balls from his bra, members lost any sympathy they might have had.
Well, thank you for that. I'm glad I came. Well, let's look at the final score. And it's interesting to Alan and Nick, but not so interesting to Richard and Tony, who have scored 8, while the opposition, Alan and Nick, have scored 17. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Daily Telegraph, sent in by James Hartley of Walsall.
Seen outside St. Paul's Church, Carlisle, don't let anxiety kill you, allow the church to help.
And with that, goodbye!
Taking part in the news quiz were Richard Ingrams, Alan Corran, Tony Snattery and Nick Clark. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson and Robert Fraser-Steele. The producer was Alad Evans.